is take pictures of the audience so I can put them on my blog. I have to do this for tax reasons, so that I can attach it to the expenses claim or something. So I'll do both ends of the room, and then you won't feel left out either way. Okay. That's that done. The blog will get a lot of plugging all the way through. For those of you that haven't ever been there, robmiles.com. I was thinking about this lunchtime, and Rob Miles is quite easy to remember. It's basically a theft followed by a great distance, okay? which is as good a setup for what you're about to get as anything, I suppose. What I'm going to be talking about, well, quick straw poll. How many folk here have used the micro framework before? Okay, a small number. That's excellent. How many people here are C-sharp developers? Okay, and how many folk use Visual Studio? Of course you all do, because what else could you use? And right, what you can do after this talk is go back home, get your CV out, and add embedded developer to your list of qualifications, okay? Because you've all actually got the fundamental abilities that you need to write embedded software and run it on hardware like this, which is my robot. This is Oscar, and he's been behaving himself mostly, so we'll just have to see what happens when I want to turn him loose. One of my particular tricks is to turn Oscar on via the computer, but not turn his motors on, so he doesn't actually move. So if he doesn't move, remind me of that in about 10 minutes' time. But the idea of what I'm going to talk about is basically using the C-sharp and the studio skills that you've got to move into a completely new development area with lots of interesting opportunities and this is rather nice, the actual cost of entry, the hardware you need to buy to get into this, has actually dropped dramatically in price over the last year. So for about $25, you can get an embedded microcontroller powered by the micro framework. If you go up market a little bit to around $50 or so, you can get ones with built-in networking. And at that point, life as a developer of small embedded devices gets very interesting. And so that's really what I'm talking about. The micro framework as a way in which you can take your existing skill set and apply it in a brand new field. And so what you're going to get from me in about 75 minutes, but it'll seem much longer. These are the jokes, by the way. I have a book completely full. All right, I have two pages of really good jokes, which I'm going to have to keep. I always have a few good jokes on standby in case the demos don't work. So I'll leave it to you to decide whether or not demos not working is, yeah. Actually, everything. Here's a tip for people that have come to the conference for next year, okay? Here's what you do for next year. Before you come out to the conference, go out and buy the biggest and most expensive backpack you can find, okay? A really flash one, a really posh one, a really expensive one. And then get a Tech Days or Dev Days sticker and put it on the back. And then all your friends will be going, where the heck did you get that? Where are they giving those away? Oh, they're giving them away. Go ask at reception. They've got loads. Oh. Or you can use lines like, what, you didn't get one? Oh, I am sorry. Maybe it's just for tall people. Yeah, it's kind of expensive, but I'm sure it would go down an absolute storm. But I digress. What you're going to get from me, including a lot of wonderful jokes, is what the micro framework is, what you can do with it, how we connect sensors and interfaces to it, and what you can do with it in terms of controlling a robot, and then finally the grand finale. Now, you don't just have to control robots, although they are kind of cute. People like things that run around the floor. The areas of operation of this framework are much wider than just simple control apps. But that's one of the things I want to try and bring home to people. As far as we're concerned, we've probably got a mindset which is that C-sharp and Visual Studio and .NET are tools that are very good for making PC applications. They're also terribly good for this device, the Windows Phone. And if you've been involved in Windows Mobile, you'll have written code for those kind of devices as well. However, there's more to .NET than this, and the micro framework is one of these situations where it's a totally new place to work. The lovely thing about C# and .NET for me is I can write exactly the same code and I can deploy it on devices where the processor is the size of my thumbnail or on big arrays of servers sitting out there in the cloud and pretty much everywhere in between. It's a nice skill set to have because it fits on all kinds of devices right through the spectrum. And I'm going right down to the Didi end. Although you can actually make these things cloud connected. You can actually put wireless or network on there and make them sensors feeding information into the cloud if you want to do that. In fact, Colin Miller, who actually heads up the micro framework effort in Microsoft, ran a competition at Mix where he gave people tiny sensors, little battery-powered devices with a bunch of sensors in there, and a data log, and a Wi-Fi connection. And this thing would log movements and temperature and light levels and then push them up into the cloud when it found Wi-Fi. And so what Colin had is a little roving application, and he had people going out and twiddling it around and getting interesting sensor readings and pushing them up into the cloud. So you can go straight from this to your back end really easily. And that's worth looking at. That's kind of a fun thing to do. So, the .NET Micro Framework came about a few years ago. Anyone here remember Microsoft Spot Watches? Spot stands for Smart Personal Object Technology. Microsoft have this habit of starting things way ahead of their time and then having the rest of the world catch up and then being sold by Apple, which is the bit they don't quite get right, which is very annoying. Spot came out several years ago now, and it's basically a watch which has a radio receiver in it which you can push messages to and run programs on. And they wanted to have an operating environment for their mobile watch. And they were thinking about lots and lots of fridge magnets that could tell what was in the fridge and all kinds of very small embedded devices. And one of their engineers said, okay, I'm going to get C# running on a very small microcontroller. And they said, okay, do that. And he came back, and what he basically built is the thing which takes your C# semi-compiled code, the intermediate language, and interprets it. And so what we have is a specifically designed platform just for taking very small applications and running them on very constrained hardware. And so the Spot watches that Microsoft produced were actually running C# code they compiled and built and put into the watch to actually do this job. And you could do things like stock information, your email, and what have you. The snag was that it never got as far as Europe because they have to deploy a radio network to actually connect these things to, and that's the bit we didn't have at this side of the pond. But the idea was that they wanted something to run in very small devices, but they wanted to keep the lovely environment that you get with C# and Visual Studio. If you start looking at these things in context, at the high end, you've got Windows PCs, you've got desktops, you've got tablets, you've got notebook PCs, all running Windows 7. And these are quite large, powerful, multi-purpose devices. Drop down one level, and you put Windows embedded into devices. This is either Windows XP based, or now with the new modular versions of Windows 7, we're starting to see those appearing. And now we have devices like robots, ATMs, cash tills, and these things are all effectively PCs running custom software and driving custom hardware. Drop down one more level and you're into Windows CE, which underpins a huge range of devices, including Windows Phone, Zune, and it's also in lots and lots of proprietary devices, data loggers, mobile terminals. There's a huge market for people using Windows CE as the platform to drive their thing. The CE stands for Compact Edition, as I recall. At the far end underneath this, though, that's where Micro Framework comes in. So now we have single-purpose, low-cost-to-manufacture, embedded devices, remote controls, watches, side panels on displays, data loggers, sensor networks, all that kind of stuff. This is where Micro Framework lives. In terms of the hardware, on the PC side, we've got connected PC performance, high-power graphics, Visual Studio, dual-core, quad-core, multi-core processors, and we're powered from the mains, or a big fat battery. XP embedded, we're using x86, we're using PC class performance. If you drop down to Windows CE, Now we're looking at small, low-powered devices. Interesting thing, Windows CE plus compact framework, to get all that to run, you need 12 megabytes of memory. That's how much memory you have for the jitter and all the libraries and the assemblies that make the program go, which is a fair amount of memory. And this will run on MIPS processors, ARM chips, with MMU's memory management unit. These are fairly reasonably powerful devices, Windows Phone kind of category stuff. Micro Framework comes in, no memory management, and you can run your .NET code in 250 to 500K, which is tiny. Very small amounts of memory. Still managed code, very low power. But there's a couple of things that you must take away that come out from this. Firstly, everything is connected. These days, a computer isn't a useful device unless you can connect it to something else via network. So all the way through the micro framework, you will see, yep, we can do all the network stuff you would like. We can do sockets. We can even make a mic. We could even turn my robot or its bigger brother into a website if we like. We can do all the HTTP. We can do all that kind of stuff. That's all built in. So we're connected right the way along the whole spectrum. And the other thing which is very important, at all points, we're using Studio and C#. So we're writing high-level code, and we're debugging it in a high-level environment. So we've basically got those two things going right across the spectrum, from cloud to this kind of stuff. And so we really are looking at trying to make it as easy for programmers to get to grips with this stuff. If you look at the Windows libraries in their glorious entirety, you have all this kind of good stuff broken down into chunks. If you look at what Windows CE gives you, then we start, the compact framework, we start looking at things that are missing, and we're looking at just the bits you actually need to run on an embedded device. If you go for the micro framework, big chunks of stuff disappear, which is kind of sad, but after all, the processor's this big. If you look at Oscar, his brain is that big chip there, that's it. And you can buy the chips on their own if you want to build some custom hardware and surface mount it yourself. So you can go off to GHI and say, I'd like some .NET processors, and then go off to China and get some custom PCBs made up to take these, and your cost of manufacture goes right through the floor. But it does mean that things like SQL Server, ha, ain't going to happen. Okay? You can make this a client of a server. You can push commands up and down to it, no worries at all. But in terms of actually running the big league stuff, not possible. But you get security, you get collections, you get globalization support, you get threading, you get diagnostics, you get interop, you get serialization, you get XML, you get some 2D drawing support to make touch panels that look good, and you get text support as well. So you get all the bits that you need to make an embedded development system really fly. And the interesting thing about the way it works is we have no operating system. Nothing. The program sits on top of a set of libraries which provide what the program needs. As far as the program is concerned, we don't notice. We fire up a thread, and the thread starts running. Now, normally, that would be a command going through down to Windows that will then fire the thread up and give us references and a handle, and off we go. In the case of the micro framework, we have a threading library. That's it. It sits underneath the actual API for threading and just does the job. Same for collections, same for network, same for anything else. There is no operating system because we're not switching programs. I turn this robot on, and it behaves like a robot. If it behaved like a remote control or something, I would have a bad system. So the idea here is that you turn the power on, the E2 PROM with the program in is loaded up and runs, and at that point it has control, because that's the kind of devices that customers are going to want with this tech inside. Okay? So there's no operating system. Everything's provided by a runtime library that sits underneath, and that's it. Now, this simplifies things massively, and it's how you fit it all in 200K, which is nice. In terms of how it really works, Microsoft uses this thing. Have you heard of MSIL? IL-DASM? You can take your compiled program and look at the individual instructions that make it work. It's kind of like a fun, sort of nerdy thing to do. I work at the university, and I like to show my students that actually programs are made up of much simpler steps when they run, and MSIL is worth showing people at that level. It's not the end of the game, though, because just before your program runs, the PC or the Windows CE device will just in time compile it, make the runtime, and jump into that. So that's how it happens on the big brothers, if you like. In the case of MicroFramework, we take each bytecode instruction, decode it, execute it, move on to the next one. It's like a spiritual ancestor to the original Bill Gates BASIC, which was also interpreted in the same kind of way. And so you get a performance hit for that, but you get a really small memory footprint. And for the things that you're building, it doesn't matter that the memory is tiny, so the performance is a bit slow, because you're making remote controls and things. You don't need microsecond response for those. Milliseconds is perfectly good. So as far as we're concerned, we're interpreting our code. So we don't get massive performance, but we don't care, because that's not the kind of thing we're headed for with these devices. So if you look at how the platforms work, what you get is basically a set of reference behaviors, and then individual hardware manufacturers will take those and add components and elements of their own. One thing I should mention at this point as well, which is very interesting, the .NET Micro Framework is now shared source. When we started doing this, people were asking questions like, how much does it cost to start making thousands of these devices? Because even if Microsoft charged me 50 cents a unit, that's going to cost me a fortune in the long run. As far as MicroFramework is concerned, at the moment, it's now been released under shared source. That means if you really want to, you can buy a raw ARM microprocessor, build some hardware around it, get the porting kit that contains the source and all the libraries to make a MicroFramework device, compile it, customize it for your hardware, build it and run it, and maybe even sell it at no cost. You don't have to pay Microsoft for any of this. You just bring it all down, build the system out of it, and start making devices and making money, which is rather nice. So you don't end up being tied into any kinds of licensing deals. You can start with your own empty chips, or you can buy other people's chips and put their versions of the code on there. If you really want to get ambitious, you can think in terms of building custom hardware, writing custom low-level drivers for that, and then tying them in to your own MicroFramework installation. That's kind of like a brave and interesting thing to do, but it's a nice level of flexibility that you've got in terms of building stuff. So you can go anywhere with this stuff. You can build systems, or you can use other people's. Either way will work. And there's lots of different processor boards out there. And some of them you buy. This one here, this one here costs about $25. And the red bit is the interesting bit. That's the bit that contains the processor doing all the work. There's then a carrier board underneath with some amplifiers and a motor board underneath that with some power transistors to actually control the motors that drive the wheels. But the actual processor bit will fit into a memory socket, into a socket on your board. And you can buy this and use it at that level, or you can buy the chip and make custom hardware. If you're currently using a PC or a Windows CE device to do things like count people going through doors or track entry or that kind of stuff, then this will knock your production costs through the floor. An awful lot cheaper and battery powered and no operating system and no nothing. It just works. So it's great. It's rather nice. I like it. It's a good toy. This is one of the boards. This is a little red one. This is a Fez Mini, and you can find it at tinyclr.com. And to give you an idea of size, that yellow bit there is the USB connector. And then you've got a crystal, and the chip does all the work, and you've got the reset button, and that's it. And this thing will fire up and run C#. In fact, in a minute or two, we'll do that inside the brain of this device here. Go up a level, and we can start putting color LCD panels on with touch screens and buttons and lots of pins to hang other things on. This device from Device Solutions has an SD card slot, and it's the next level up. So this would be a clever remote control with a touch screen or a touch panel or whatever, or buttons. You would not tend to base your product on this particular board. What you do is take this to your venture capitalist and say, look, I've made this wonderful idea. It's going to cost me $100,000 or so to get the thing tooled up and made and mass-produced. What do you think? So this is a prototyping platform, but it's a very nice one, and it works very well. The big one, the really big interesting device is this one, which is also made by Chipworks. Again, this carrier has got a touch screen, a whole bunch of interfaces, network, MP3 playback in hardware, left and right speakers, SD card slot, lots of buttons. The processing is done by this card here, which is my micro framework device, and the rest of it is just a carrier. So again, use this to make your prototypes and then make a board. You can plug this thing in to get stuff done. So lots and lots of hardware options, lots and lots of fun you can have. And we'll have all this, hopefully, going in a few minutes or two. Of course, real hardware is great, but pretend hardware is useful as well. What you do is you get, effectively, an emulation process which is built into the framework so that you can prove your code works before the hardware has even been built. So the idea here is that what I can do is I can actually set my hardware teams and my software teams off running in parallel, design a spec we both agree on, and then start actually making stuff. I have many claims to fame. One of my favorite claims to fame is that for about 10 years, I was the person that put date stamps on bottles of Budweiser. If you bought a bottle of Budweiser, you had a date stamp burnt on the side, and we did that by using a laser, which was about the size of this desk, great big gas laser, and a metal mask on the end of some stepper motors that we turned to stop the light going through. And we'd fire the laser, there'd be an enormous bang, and then the paint on the bottle label would be burnt off in the shape of the date stamp. And we had these going for about 5 or 6 years for Anheuser-Busch. And we also do Asahi beer in Japan, so in the same way. And my job was to write the code to control the disk drive and make the date stamps come out okay. And they gave me a processor board, a memory socket, and a big thick manual and said, lots of luck, Rob, and left. Okay? It took me about 2 weeks to get a LED to flash. Okay, but when I got that LED flashing, I was doing cartwheels. I had to get the compiler. I had to get it to put the code in the right place. I had to find out where in memory the light lived, and had to go off and get the manual for the controller chip to find out how to tell this chip to turn the lights on and off, then write a whole bunch of custom drivers to get those to go. And of course, if any one of my things was wrong, I didn't get anything to see. It just sat on the desk and grinned at me. I'm not working, ha 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 ha. And so I had to sort of, was really a tough ask to get it to go. But once I got my LED flashing, I knew that my code was running, the speed was okay, the memory was in the right place, and I can control devices. And after that point, it got a lot easier. And so then my real-time clock chip came in, blah, 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 blah. And at the end of it, we were actually firing the laser. And you haven't really lived until your code has fired a laser, folks. I'm sorry, but it's great. One time, they took the lens out, and the wall caught fire, which was even which is brilliant. It was all ultraviolet, so you'd lean over and your shirt would burst into flames, which is never good. But I digress. As far as micro framework is concerned, what you do is you build a custom emulator. Okay? You build a custom environment inside which your application will live. You can even skin it like the real product. And you can write C-sharp code that emulates the physical devices that you're actually going to be controlling. So if you want to have a program that controls something, you can build all the output stuff. One of my other achievements, that sounds even better. I wanted my Christmas tree lights to flash red whenever I made a blog post. Because you do, don't you? Okay, so I used a micro framework device for this. A friend of mine who does hardware, we sat in the pub one night, and he literally drew out the circuit on the back of a napkin, and we built this thing up. And I had a micro framework device going online, pulling down my RSS feed, getting the date stamp from it, and going, okay, when I see a date stamp that's changed, I'll flash the Christmas tree lights red. And my wife was completely and utterly unimpressed. Why is it doing that? Are they broken? No, that's just taken me 3 days and a big bunch of hardware. You can find all the stuff. But one of the things I did, and you can find this on Coding for Fun as well, is I built an emulation of the shift register and the light drivers that I actually used to control it. So effectively, I've got three pins. One's running a clock, one's running data, the other one's running a sense signal back in again. And I had all the emulation for that actually written in C sharp, so I could be absolutely sure my code worked before I shipped it, before we built the hardware, which is kind of nice. But you can effectively build your own infrastructure, wrap it around your application, and away you go. So it's very easy. This is the default emulator, which has 5 buttons, an LCD panel, and you can do serial ports as well with it. But you can customize your own and configure it how you like to reflect the actual platform that you're building, which is really nice. Like I said, don't go around spending money trying to ship products based on this, because that isn't how the business model works. I've had people come up to me after these talks who've gone away and found out that rather than using XP to control their car park entry system or whatever, they can get one of these devices and the hardware price goes right through the floor. Get it made up in China, low cost, and away you go. So there you are. There's lots of things these things can do, from making a pin go up and down to control. This is the green, red and red lights on my robot. But you can also do I2C, SPI, serial, USB, host and client, and all kinds of other things as well. You've also got a thing called device profile for web services, which means you can effectively hang this thing on a network and have other devices hitting it through HTTP, either making it do stuff or getting sensor information back. So you can build web service binding points, very easy to do. I mean, I've even put web servers on these things, which is kind of fun, because you can sort of get the state of your things as web pages, which is quite sweet. And you can use it anywhere you want a bit of processing power inside a device. And that goes from embedded controllers to data terminals to robots to whatever you want to build. And you don't have to learn anything new. So how do you write programs? Okay, it's time to get our hands dirty and see if we can set fire to something. C#, Visual Studio 2010, and you can debug code even inside the device. And I love this. This is absolutely great. So one of the things you can get from GHI, they'll do a little board for about $120, which has got the processor and then some other bits and pieces you can hang off it, like a touch button and a LED and all kinds of other stuff. This is quite good. I use these. I work at the University of Hull, and I teach my students how to program. And in the second year, we have a course which looks at hardware, and I can get them to take all their C# code and all their .NET skills and run them on this and look on their faces when they press the button and the light comes on, because they've written code to do that. It's really nice. And they can get a feel for how you control hardware. This is my little robot, and I've put some bits and pieces on him. This is him when he was younger. He used to put on a bit of weight since then. He's got some lights on the front and a distance sensor, and also an XP receiver, of which more in a second. So you can build it up how you like. And I like just playing with these things, because I find this kind of stuff kind of fun. So let's make a robot that's a coward, okay? Cowards live longest, so I am told. So let's find a program which is running. Okay, Lap2's a charm. This is my robot program. It's presently running inside the robot, okay? So I've got my microframework device on the end of a USB cable, and the code is running quite happily. And what this code does is, if the robot's happy as he is now, the green light is lit. He has a distance sensor on the front. And as my hand gets closer, he'll get progressively more nervous, and the light will go red. That means he's a bit worried. Go back a bit, go a bit further, and he fires up the motor and backs away, you see. So this is basically a robot coward. Okay, so how do we do that? Well, let's have a look at the code. You can see it all up here. I've got a method called cowardly behavior in my robot control code. And what I'll do is I'll just tidy this up a bit. And hopefully it'll all behave itself nicely for me. C#, standard code all the way through. A few methods I'm calling to do stuff. Really quite nice to understand. I have a distance detector. I'll show you the code for that in a second. I just decide I'm going to make a string and print it out, sleep for 200 milliseconds. If I've been told to shut down, of which more in a minute or two, I shut down. I kill everything. Otherwise, I take my distance values, and if the distance is less than whatever, I turn my LEDs on, if I get really low, if I get less than 5 centimeters, I think it is, I actually turn on the motors. So I turn my motors on go in reverse for a while, and then turn them on, stop for 300 milliseconds, and turn them off again. Interesting things about this, I should be able to put breakpoints in here. So now, if I actually move my hand close to Mr. Robot, bum, 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 you should hit a breakpoint and stop. There you go. Now that's quite cute, because what's happened now is I'm interacting with software that's actually running inside my hardware. I've changed the hardware conditions in some way, and bang, my studio program has okay, you brought your hand too close. I'm going to turn that. So if I step over this line, then it'll turn the motors on for a few milliseconds, and my robot will try and jump off the desk. So I better get hold of it. So if I just step over this statement, which is, where are we, Robert? There we go. My robot motors are now running. If I step over to sleep, then step again, the motors stop. So what that means is that I've got code sitting inside my robot, which I can do all the wonderful things I can do in C-sharp on a desktop machine. And notice that I put that breakpoint in the program while it was running. So compared to me and my doing cartwheels because my red LEDs managed to flash, this is really traveling in a fur-lined Rolls Royce. It's just lovely. It's a very nice place to work. And you get all the good stuff. I can do modification of values. I can fire up the immediate window. And I can change the contents of variables inside the processor and then run on if I want to do that. I can interrogate and put watches on and look at contents of variables and all that good stuff. So I get all the wonderfulness that Visual Studio gives me, but now it's targeted inside a particular device. So it's all very well having a method called redled.shutoff, but what does that actually do? Well, let's go have a look. Okay? It calls a method called setState, which turns the thing off to false. Let's just drill through a little bit further. And this is the one now I want to show you, led.write. Because what that is, if we look up here a bit more, just make that a bit bigger. This is the thing which you do when you want to make yourself a piece of hardware. If you've played with hardware in the past from computer programs, it can be a bit of a pain because you have to figure out mappings of pins and bits and pieces and, oh, there it is. Don't like that very much. What you have in the micro framework is an object-based abstraction hiding the hardware from me. So LED is an output port tied to a particular pin, and the true means when you create this port, set the initial level to true. Now, the reason why I'm doing that is because there's a transistor amplifying my output signal, which means that I have to set it high, which means that when it inverts it through the amplifier, the light starts off low, which is fair enough. But what I'm doing here is making myself a thing called LED. And what LED does is basically abstracts away what the hardware looks like. And I can drift down here and I can basically write to my LED to turn it on or off. This is a fancy piece of LED behavior provided by GHI, who make this hardware. Because with the GHI LED driver, you can make it blink. You can say, start blinking, here we go, and it'll basically flash the light on and off. And it does that by spinning up a thread, which does that flashing for it, which is kind of quite nice, because it means that you can now start making embedded devices and using threads and locking and all the good stuff that you know to make multiprocessor apps fly. So as far as we're concerned, we've got code running in here. We're debugging it through Studio. We have objects that represent all the physical devices that we're going to actually be putting into our system, and it's really, really easy to write. So cowardly robots, all that kind of stuff, anything which responds to signals and does stuff in C#, very easy and nice to do. Here's the other bit I wanted to show you. The abstractions provided by GHI give you a distance detector, which is effectively a little tiny piece of C# that actually hits this device here and does some timing. We fire off some infrared, we time how long it takes to get back. We get a number from there, and that gives us our distance value, and it works surprisingly well. It's very easy to use, too. I just make myself a distance detector of a particular type and then ask it what it is. And so here you go. Here's a nice sort of simple version of the robot cowardly behavior, where I get my distance, and if I don't like it, I move backwards, go turn, sleep for a while, and then turn the motors off, and then wait 200 milliseconds and go around again. One of the nice things about embedded code, it's perfectly okay to write while true, because I don't want this to stop. Because if it stops, my robot stops being a cowardly robot and starts being something else. So it's all good stuff, and it all works very well. I've got methods I can use to call to turn lights on and off, and that's how my red and green lights work. And this is the bit that I wanted to mention next, which is that if you ever play with robots, one of the things that you want to build really early on is called a kill switch, okay? We used to have a robot in the lab where I was working at the uni, which was quite big. And if you said things like, put your hand 2 foot below the desk, it would do that. Poof, and it was new desk time. And there'd be an enormous bang. If the robot starts to go a bit loopy, you want a way of killing it, okay? You want to have a way in which you can sort of stop it really fast. And a big red mechanical button works nicely for this. One of the things you can do in the micro framework, just like you would for a Windows form, I can bind events to button presses. So effectively, when you hit this device has some little buttons actually on the board. They're at the front up here. And so I made one of those my kill switch. And I've defined it as an interrupt port, and I've bound a method to it, which is my kill switch button press event handler. And when that runs, it basically turns the power off. So I can do that. If you don't mind, I'll step over this one, because I've got a few other things to pack in, and it might take a while to get the robot to work. But effectively what happens is that, as you've seen in my code, when we get a message from this button, it effectively shuts down. And so if you want to get signals and have code running on response to them, you just use interrupts, which map onto events in the C-sharp world. And so here you go. And it's just delegate country. It's all everything you know and love about C-sharp and the library, it all just sits in there, and it all just flies, which is rather good. Threading, yep, you can do threading. Threads are really nice. You can have a foreground thread and a background thread, ticking clocks, all kinds of stuff. We've got full support for synchronization as well. And this is kind of, okay, here we go. This is my grand finale, okay? Now what I'll do is I'll skip past the demo and then we'll build up to it. But what I've got is this lot, okay? And if this works, we'll all, on the big cheer to raise the roof, okay? What I've got is this. These are very interesting. You can get them for $50 from Texas. Anyone seen this? It's a little watch that contains a microcontroller. Bad news, it's not micro framework controlled. You're not programming .NET. To program this, you have to write C++ or C and encode it inside. Good news, it contains an accelerometer and a wireless modem. So I can actually get the watch to send orientation and movement signals from transceiver in there to this device here on a USB pin. Now you get all this for your $50. It's actually great fun. I bought one of these a year or so ago and I had a lot of fun with it. So this thing here is my USB serial port, and it turns out rather nicely that this board, the micro framework device that controls the actual my robot controller, has USB hosting. So any USB device you want to actually log information from, or you want to use a keyboard or a mouse or that kind of stuff, I can plug it in here, and then I can interact with that device through microframework code, which is nice. Okay? This has a wireless transmitter called XBI, which then talks down the line to my robot down here, Mr. Coward. Now, I'll have to change his program in a minute, but the idea is that I send him commands when the user tips his robot particular way. And that's what it does. Yep, if you want to host stuff, then you have a whole bunch of different devices that you can actually hang off this thing. And then you've got your XBI connection. If you want to make a network of connected sensors, these things are well worth a look. What they run over a wireless protocol, and I'll show you the code that configures them in a second or so, but as far as this device is concerned, it's providing a wireless serial port connection from here to here. You configure these things to effectively bond them together. So any situation where you want to send serial data over the wire, this is a very nice way to do it. The data rate isn't wonderful, but it works quite well. The software using this doesn't have to do any work at all, because as far as it's concerned, it has a serial port, and what gets pushed in down here gets popped out down here. So if you want to write any kind of remotely controlled stuff using serial comms and run it over the wire, this is good. I mean, you could use something like Bluetooth, but Bluetooth's horrible to configure. It's like Nightmare City. These things have about 10 or 15 different modes you can use them, and I'm using them as simple point-to-point. But you can actually address packets to stations and get a mesh to work. And so if you have 20 devices you want to connect, this mechanism will work quite nicely as well. And you can do encryption on the link should you wish to do that. I'm keeping things, pardon me, very simple. I've bonded these two transceivers, and away we go. As far as my program is concerned, I'm using a serial port. So all your C# serial port programming smarts, just use them. And another thing which you can do, which is really rather nice, is I can make serial device emulations for my test harness. So what I can do is I can actually build myself a program which behaves like a device on the end of a serial port. A few years ago, we sent the students a practical exercise, which is quite funny. We gave them a mobile device. It was a Windows mobile phone, and they ran off with it. No. They had to produce a device which would tell you when it was time to start walking to your lecture. So the device would know where you were, where the lecture was, what time it started, and it would go bing-bong to say, start walking now. The further you were away from this place, the earlier it would go bing-bong. Fine, okay? And I was watching students test this, and it was hilarious because they were walking around campus. And I was laughing and pointing, and they're out there in the rain going, it's working, it's working, it's working. Don't do that. People will laugh at you. People will think you're a second year. What you do is you do that walk once, you get a huge pile of GPS values, and you then feed those into the serial port of whatever device is decoding them. So you can effectively fake your journeys and test the thing sitting comfortably in your big chair with your big monitor and get good results without leaving your room. And in fact, that's what I told them to do, and I managed to keep a straight face while I was doing it, which was actually quite impressive as well. What I did to test one program I wrote is I actually drove around Yorkshire, where I live, with a laptop and a GPS puck. This is about 5 or 6 years ago. And I actually just captured a whole bunch of data then and fed that in and just used that. And it works a treat. So as far as we're concerned, if you're doing this, plan for it, but you can make complete emulations of the serial devices for your test harnesses, and away you go. And as it says there, we can do hosting as well. What I will do though now is, having built this up massively, is I'll actually get my hands really dirty and break everything, okay? So let's go back to my microframework. Now, as I say, Oscar's been being a bit reticent recently. This is the one that's debugging, so I'll stop you from running. And quick as a flash, he drops back to default behavior. And I'll go on to my robot control, which is this one here. Now, this version of the program, let's just double check, has got the robot control behavior set up to do cowardly behavior, which is not what I want. Okay, let's try you then. I wish I was cleverer. It would save a lot of time. Oh, gosh. I'm looking at the wrong thing. Thank you for spotting that, Rob. So, yeah, this is what I was doing. Okay, so what we're going to have to do is take our life in our hands and go for robotcontrol.cs, find my main method, turn off cowardly behavior, and turn on remote control behavior. Now, I'll show you the remote control code in a minute once I've made this work. and then I'll be doing cartwheels again. So I just do that. Oh, one thing I'll show you which is worth looking at as well. I can hang my robot onto my, or my microframework device, onto my computer by a variety of different connections. And it's all managed through a properties tab in Visual Studio. So at the moment I'm saying, send this out over the USB and use the USB driver for the USB UZI, which is the one this device is sitting on behind. If I look at my drop-down, I've also got serial port, so I can deploy programs over RS-232. But I've also, and this is really interesting, I've got TCP/IP. I can network my microframework device, stick it in an air conditioning duct in the middle of nowhere, and hang it off the LAN, and still deploy updates to my code over the network connection. Better yet, I can debug it in there. So I can single-step my code on the device over the network using the TCP/IP. And that works astonishingly well. So you've really got some very nice deployment options. USB is what I'm using at the moment, so I'll stick with that. And what I'll do now is I'll hit the go button, and this will either work, in which case we'll be doing cartwheels, or it'll fail massively, in which case I'll be doing something else. Oh, gosh. That was scary. What are you doing now then, sir? Are you running? Yep. Dum-dum-dum-dum-dum. And I think that means we're in good shape. Yep, there's all the diagnostics. I think it seems quite happy. So what's happening now is my robot's just sat there, okay? And it's sitting waiting for commands. If I have a look in robot control, and one of the things that I, another point I should have made a little earlier, all this code is available for download, robmiles.com. I'm going to put all this up there. So if you don't quite get what's going on, download this and have a look at it. There's no magic. Can't, because it's coming from me. Hey, I haven't had a joke for ages. Let's find a funny joke, okay. That one's too rude. Oh, okay. Yeah. I went to see Hull City play at home football match. Hull City, anyone heard of them? No? Do you know what's unique about Hull City and the entire football league? They're the only team in the UK Football League that hasn't got anything in their name you can colour in. That's a really good pub quiz question, okay? At least I thought so. But I was stood there, and this hearse went past with a coffin inside, and this gentleman queuing next to me stood up, took his hat off, and bowed as the hearse went past and went back into the queue. And I said, good gracious, I said. That was an extremely, a very decorous thing to do. Good on you, sir. Well done. You know, paying respects like that. I should have done that too. Well done. And he said, yes. He said, she was a good wife for 20 years. But I digress. Okay, what's happening inside my robot now, if I have a look in remote control, is that I'm waiting. Well, when I fire it up, I bind an event to the data received event on the serial port. And if I go and have a look at the, go to the definition of that, then this is basically the stuff that you would write to read a serial port on any device. So I go off and I get the stuff, I convert it into an array of bytes, I make it into a string, and when I've got my string, I just do this. Convert it into a message, pull out the text. If the word is forward, my robot goes forward. If the word is back, my robot goes back. And left and right make it turn as well. So I've basically got my robot sitting on the end of a network, a serial connection, waiting for commands. And what I can do now is I'll just stop the program. I'll unplug the robot. And I'll place him down here. Okay, no pressure, but you don't mess around with me, okay? And I'll unplug this device, and I'll plug in the actual remote control application. And, oh, thank you. I've got a session. Who'd have thought? An hour late. No, I don't want to do that. Right, this is the point at which we have to get clever, so I'll just put you to sleep. I'll get hold of you. Turns out, if you ever want to play with your Texas watch, this ends up being a serial port. So as far as you're concerned, any device that can support a serial port can talk to a Texas watch. They provide some nice little drivers, but I've written my own that sit inside. I'll plug that in. So that's going to sit down there and fire up. So now what I'm going to do is I'm just going to take the other end of this cable and plug it in here. There you go. So now, this is a really rather nice device. This has got, let's plug both ends in, Rob, otherwise it won't do anything at all. It might be good, but it isn't that good. It's got a rather big touch display. And one of the things that MicroFrame will let you do is design a WPF type tiled interface where you can position items on the screen. I've just got some simple text coming, which gives me some status. But now, hopefully, this is sitting sampling and waiting for messages from my watch. Okay? And so I turn my watch on and start it transmitting. And yeah, so the idea is now, are you ready for this? Because I'm not. Tip the watch forward, and a whole heap of nothing happens. Okay, right. Now then. Yeah, so you'd have felt real fools if you'd clapped, wouldn't you? Right, so what we do now is we unplug my remote, and I'll show you some more fun that we can have. So what I'm going to do now, and this is really brave, I'm going to debug the code in the robot and the code in the transmitter at the same time, try and find out what's going wrong. So plug this in here. I've now got two different USB devices sitting on the end of two different connections. And if I go back to my original program, who have we here? This is the robot controller. I'll deploy this into my robot control program. And the first thing I'll test is whether or not the actual watch interface is working correctly. So that's now going down into the device. And so now, if I just give myself a bit more room to see things, you can see I have a little test process here that makes the robot do a little gavotte where it'll spin around. We're getting values from the watch, which you can see ticking up there. And if I tip the watch forward, X goes to minus 35, 40, whatever. If I tip the watch back the other way, then X goes up to 50. Can you see this number here is changing? So my watch interface is working quite nicely, thank you very much. And I can tip it all around, so that side's okay. So I'm debugging the code inside my controller board, and everything on that side seems to be okay. So my watch is behaving itself, which means the fault lies with you, sunshine. Okay, no pressure. So what we'll do now is drift back into my MicroFrame demos. We'll get hold of the robot client code. We'll open it up, and we'll make sure that it's actually sitting inside the watch correctly, inside the robot correctly. So this is my robot driver, which takes the commands. Now I'll just make sure that I can deploy this. Yes, that's good. So now I hit the go button, and we have a rattling noise. And the robot resets. And I'm thinking if this does go on, it'll probably try and jump off the desk. So let's have a look at my output. Ah, okay. Yeah, that's fine. I have different versions of mine. I'm in DLL version hell now, because that's not the one that I wanted. Let's go and try and find a different, less broken one, shall we, Robert? Let's go back into. Ba-da-ba-dum. Yep, this is what happened. So here we go. Robot. Yeah. I think it'll be time for another joke in a minute. Absolutely. It'll be a really long one as well. It'll go on for absolutely ages. I might tell you my life story, but no, you don't deserve that. You've not been nasty to me at all. So if I can now find my presentations, and then we'll go have a look in here, and in here, and in here. This will probably fail in the same way, but it'll be much more satisfying. What happens is that the robot contains a version of the MicroFramework firmware which has to be compatible with the environment in which it's been built, which is fine. Unfortunately, owing to the fact that I've done something silly, I've got different versions of the framework in the two devices. So check in the project. Let's see if this works. Properties. Go on. Oh, that's not going well at all. I'll just press the go button. What's the worst that could happen? I think we've already seen what the worst that can happen is. Pardon? I wouldn't mind, actually. That means it's working. Okay, so. I've been thinking about making some musical bread, but I only have the dough so far. All right, okay, another one. All right. So I'll just cross that one out. Yes. I went out to buy a computer, and the man said, "This one, sir, will do half your work." I said, "I'll have two then." Right. I reckon that we now have, to coin a phrase, action. So I'm going to put you down here, still on the tether. And hang on. You know. Okay. So what I can do, though, I can take a look in Robot Driver and wibble down to where his messages are. And if I find the right piece of code, wrong one, I apologize. I don't like coding under pressure. I love it when things just work and everybody claps and everybody's happy and we all sail into the sunset. But looks like that's not where I'm going with this. I carried all this hardware through customs, which is hilarious. Put a breakpoint there. So whenever I get a message, like not, oh, turn that on. Dunk. Dunk. Oh, right. So, yeah. Let's see what the message says. It says forward. So I've tipped my watch. The forward command has gone through. And if I fire this off, of course, the robot will instantly leap off the end of the cable. Let's try it. Yeah, you saw the lights come on. But the motor's presently turned off, I think. Let's try that. Hey! So, so it's working. So I'm hey, all right, that's it. No need to get too carried away. I mean, once the code's in the robot, I can stop the program here, and I can unplug it. Turn the robot off. Unplug the USB cable. And the idea is that the micro framework basically just starts running from whatever's in it. Put it down there. And so now, once it's got going, I can just tip this forward and the robot will instantly, go on, go on, go on, go on, go on, go on. Okay, well, the good news is I have a whole room full of witnesses. The bad news is, I don't know what's happened. So, tip the watch. Right, okay, well, you did see it. We did have a problem. There we go. You idiot. What are you doing? Oh, I know what it is. It's because it can't see the blooming radio transmitter. It's too far away. We did have a... there you go. Tip it. And it moves. Rack up. It stops. I think the problem is that the watch wasn't in range of that or vice versa. But no, after... it seems okay now. I mean, the issue we did have, which was quite amusing, was that when the batteries in here get a bit flat, when the microcontroller turns the motors on, the voltage on the batteries drops through the floor, and the processor loses its mind. And we had a fair bit of that. And it took us about half an hour to figure out, because we thought, our code's going nuts. Why is it? Because the robot was sort of doing like a little some Vitus dance. It was jigging to itself because the thing would come on, it would reset itself, it would try, and so be aware of that one, because that one can actually come and get you as well. So now having made it work and honour being satisfied, I can go back to the presentation and round off and wrap up. But you have seen it all work, which has cheered me up immensely. Okay, so, yeah. You can do what you like with these platforms, and there's a whole range of different ones which you can pick up. And you already know how to do all the stuff because you already know .NET. There are some custom libraries to do with making hardware, interfacing to pins, the more specialized serial interfaces and stuff like that. But it's all just objects. It's all just an API. If you want to lay things out, here you go. This is another version of the app that I created. This was effectively a little display. It has the date and the time, the IP address of this particular device, robot status, and the message. I actually made those using a stack panel. The WPF framework on the device, it's not quite WPF as such, but it has a very, very similar way in which you can design and lay out your components in code. So you're not counting pixels to center things. You're not making code that only works on one particular device. That's basically a stack panel that contains four text items. And I can change the properties of those things and refresh the display to make ticking clocks and that kind of stuff. I could also load in images and display those. There's also complete support for embedded resources. So I can put fonts into here for drawing stuff. I can put graphics in for images on the buttons and all that kind of stuff. And I can draw things using transparency so I can overlay layers and make things look quite pretty should I wish to do that. So you've got quite a lot of good control for the display. That's where a device like this starts to become quite interesting, because that's when you've got a nice big display to do all that on. But again, it depends on... Oh, stop it. Stop it. It determined to tell me that I'm supposed to be here giving a talk. So, yeah, you've got all that. You've got a serial port connection. There you go. And this is my sensor network. Go and have a look at curiouscloudcontest.com. I've got links on my blog to all these things, so don't worry about too much about finding them, because that's what they've built there. They've built effectively a remote sensor which is talking to the cloud and pushing information up into it. So if you have any kind of, you want to track people moving around the building or products, you can very easily interface RFID tag readers to these things. It's basically an RFID tag reader is a device on a serial port. So if you're tracking products and building handheld or fixed devices to catch information and push it back up to a server somewhere, MicroFramework's great for that. Because all you have to worry about is writing the code that does the job. There's no operating system configuration. There's no messing around that kind of. You just buy this thing and turn it on and hang it off studio, as you see me do, and you just start putting in code at program void main. Boom, and off you go. So you can do pretty much anything like this. If you have a situation in your business where you'd like to put in some embedded hardware or sell some embedded hardware, but you're scared because of the cost of getting it done, this stuff's lovely for that. You can buy a kit for under 50 euros and just take it home and play with it. Get your Christmas lights going like I did, and then go on from there. It's all very easy to do. This is the full Christmas festive lights. I used to carry this around to demonstrations as well. But if you think that they look at this thing a bit strange, this one sends them nuts. It does. They love it, all these lights flashing. What I have here is two chains of LED battery-powered pocket Christmas tree lights. And then I have a line driver, which is that chip there, and a shift register, which is that chip there. And the little wire here goes off to my MicroFramework device, and this one here is just power. And the capacitors are there because my hardware friend said, if you don't put those on, it won't work. And by gum, he was right. So they're just there to keep the power supply from jumping up and down. And those are my LEDs flashing away merrily. I just built it to see if I could do it. Coding for Fun has the circuit diagrams, the sample code, and all the other bits and pieces. If you do want to make a blog-powered festive light, and so feel free to get hold of that. It's a nice way to look at all the techniques. The methods that it uses are a little bit old now. There's some much better web... The actual latest version of Framework has web client support. That one I had to roll my own socket. I had to make a socket request and get it back on port 80. The new one has web client, which is lovely. It just does it how you would expect, which is great. So what I'm talking about here with MicroFramework is the rules are being bent and twisted a bit. Because now... What I said about you folks changing your CVs is pretty much the case. You can walk out of here and say, okay, I now know how to get started doing embedded. Okay? In the old days, you might have gone, no, I'd have to bring somebody in to do that, and I can't afford to do that. This one, you can buy a cheap kit, play with it for a while. If you decide that you're going to take it forward, then go with it. Worst case, you've got some nice Christmas tree lights. But the other thing is, if you want to make a million of these as cheap as you possibly can, then you can do that too, because you can get just the chip and build custom hardware around there to hang off it, and even your own version of the MicroFramework, should you wish to do that. It's all, as I have said, shared source. If you go onto the Microframer website, you can pull down their porting kit. It's actually quite an interesting thing to take a look at if you're just like looking at other people's code and spelunking it and playing it, because there's actually a whole bunch of interesting libraries and lumps of code that it's nice to have a look through. And as I said there, you can buy a chip and start soldering, although that's not for the faint-hearted. It's more than I have the nerve to do. I can solder some things, but surface mount kind of defeats me. So in terms of getting started, everything hangs off 2010 Visual Studio, and it'll work on the Express version as well. So you can be writing microframework code and hitting against the default emulator this evening if you want. You can be writing your own custom emulators maybe tomorrow and then building hardware over the weekend or something. I mean, the nice thing is the tool chain is free. The hardware is cheap to buy and play with. And this is, in the old days, we used to have little steam engines and all kinds of other toys and Lego and things. This is kind of just a bit further on, but just as much fun. If you want to start finding out more about this, then there are good places to go. Microsoft.com/netmf is the homepage for the platform. GHI, who make the robot, have a website at tinyclr.com. GHI are worth looking at because they also supply a 120-page PDF file, which is an overview of the framework. Now, it's pitched towards their products, fair dues, but it's actually very readable, and it's free. So the first place to find out more, I'd say, is go to tinyclr.com and take a look at what they've done. If you want to follow my so-called life, and who doesn't, that's robmiles.com. I've got a demos area on there where I'm putting some Windows Phone demos, and the micro framework stuff will go up fairly soon. I'm going to put links to all the content you've seen today on my blog post today, so if you wander along and have a look at that. If you want to buy some books, those big things you can sort of turn pages and write on, then myself and Donald Thompson wrote a book in 2007, which is based on an early version of the framework, but still extremely worth purchasing. I sold it's well worth buying. A better one. Jens Gunnar wrote a better one in 2009. He's got more detail of the more recent framework enhancements, because he's based on a more recent version of the content. So those two are worth looking at. And I'm hoping that by the end of this, you've actually now walking away, hopefully, with the feeling that, hey, I could get it. I quite like playing with hardware at school or college or uni. I quite fancy building a device. And now I've got a starting point where I can do that. And I've left us here around 10 minutes or so for questions. So if anyone has any questions, feel free to step up to the microphone and I'll see what I can do to make you a happy person. Or we could just sing some songs. Anyone got any questions? Yeah? Yep. I love that one. Yes, that's how my blog reader works. It basically just makes a socket request and then binds to the result when it comes back. So yes, you can. It's not like Windows Phone. Oopsie. Although Mango will have sockets. Mango will have sockets. Anything else? There's a guy at the back waving his arms. Yeah? Say again? Webcams? Oh, webcam support. Very good question. You can do USB hosting. I think GHI do a webcam driver. Take a look. The micro framework will be going it a bit to push the information, but I don't really see why not. So yes, yes-ish, with a side order of no. Yeah, there's no reason why not. Yep. Oh, okay, there's no operating system. How do I configure it? Basically, there are some methods you can call to set up things like IP address and all that kind of stuff. That's actually done for the device. There's a tool, if I can show you that. There's a tool called MF Deploy, which when you install the Visual Studio, the actual toolkit, what you get is your micro framework 4.1. You go into tools, and then inside here, it's a little application called MF Deploy, which I know very well. And what you can do with that is you can effectively connect to a device. over USB, say, the chip works one, and now I can go into options and set the serial port, blah, 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 and I can also go into configuration and I can set up the network. And so this is actually done, okay, yeah, the device is, it's busy at the moment, oh, I unplugged it. But what you can do is you can go in there, you can set the IP address, you can set whether it uses DHCP, whether it doesn't, you can hardwire it, you can set the subnet. It's all done in the firmware. So there's no OS, but you have got all the hooks you need to set all that kind of stuff up. You get the MAC address, all that kind of stuff as well. So it's easy to do. Any other questions? Well, in that case then, you get first go at the tea. Thank you very much.